Hello, this is Ken with Learn With Us, and this is episode 22. Today I'm joined with Jason Langsdorf, and he is a contributor on Gatsby.js. Gatsby.js is a blazing fast static site generator for React. So Jason, why don't you give us a little bit of background about you and how you got started in contributing to Gatsby?
Sure. So my career kind of took me on a weird path where I started out as trying to be a rock star. That wasn't working out too well, but along the way I learned how to build websites, which kind of took me from being a graphic designer back into the stack to where I was learning PHP, and then over time I migrated back forward to be a front-end engineer. And that took me to my most recent job, which was I was a front-end architect at IBM, working on the IBM Cloud product. And one of the things we were trying to do there is figure out ways to get more performance out of our front end. That led me to a lot of different experiments. You know, we did some GraphQL stuff. We did a lot we moved an old Dojo app to React. And along the way, we started looking at things like Next.js and Gatsby and other static site generators to see maybe we can get the most performance by doing something. You know, maybe Next is enough with the server-side rendering, or maybe we need to go further and do something fully static. And I became convinced that static sites are really, given the current state of web development, I think that static sites are enough in the vast majority of cases. So when I parted ways with IBM, I was still feeling pretty passionately that Gatsby was one of the best solutions out there for static site generation. So with the last month and a half or so, I've been pretty much just working on contributing to Gatsby, which has been a whole lot of fun.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, Gatsby looks like it's getting a lot of movement. So why don't we just kind of get a little bit of... I want to touch base real quick on some of the talks that you've given recently. So going into this transition from IBM to being a Gatsby contributor, you've also been giving some talks. So most recently you were at a conference. It was in New York.
The lead developer.
Right, lead developer. And what was the presentation you gave there?
I was talking about building processes on teams, and that's kind of specifically about some of the work that we were doing at IBM, because, you know, IBM is a huge company, and just the product I was working on had over 700 developers in it, if you consider the extended product network that's involved in it. And that meant that, you know, we initially, IBM Cloud was built as a monolith, and so there was kind of this very strict control over how things were done. And then that didn't work out very well. It was hard to maintain. There were a lot of knowledge silos. And so the next approach was kind of like, hey, we'll go microservices. Do whatever you want, and that's fine.
From one extreme to another, right?
Exactly, right? And so so what I came into was when we were trying to find a happy medium there. Like, so what was the right level of control to exert over over our team? And, you know, what was the stuff that should be left up to a team to decide? And so we started looking at different ways of driving adoption of processes. So when we were designing the processes, we had to decide what actually needed to be designed. And after designing it, we then had to figure out, well, how can we get somebody to actually follow this and not feel like we're just coming down, you know, here's the voice of God, you now have to do this thing this way because we said so. But more like, this is something that's really going to make your life better. It's really going to be beneficial to you. And it does make the whole team and product and experience of working here better. So that talk kind of dug into that. There's I'm hoping a video that's going to come out soon. I'm not sure what the timeline is for that, but you know, the conference was last week. So hopefully in the next week or two, we should see videos coming up on YouTube for all of the talks, which I would highly recommend. This is one of my favorite conferences I've been to in a long time. The content was stellar. And so, you know, watch all of the talks from that one, because it was really great.
Great. Yeah, I'm very interested in that. And I'll include a link to the conference in the show notes. So any listeners, if the video is not up by the time we post this, you can at least have access to it at a later date. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, let's jump into Gatsby and kind of get the high-level view of what Gatsby is, what other tools out there are like it, and then maybe who would want to use Gatsby, and for what reasons? Maybe there's different types of users having different purposes to use this tool.
Yeah. So we've actually had some really cool research being done by Shannon Soper, who has been doing a lot of user research on people who use Gatsby. Like, what are the use cases and why would it be used? So I'll answer that first by just repeating a lot of the stuff she's told me. But we've seen that Gatsby in general is a way to start using modern tools to build websites. And so you get to skip over a lot of the hassle-y parts. Like, you don't have to configure Webpack. You don't have to configure your Babel or ESLint, your build setup. You just kind of install it and hit Gatsby develop, and there you go. You got a site. So we get rid of a lot of the boilerplate-y stuff and abstract that away. And what that means is that as a developer, you can just kind of get a site up and running and start writing React code and immediately see that on the screen. So one group of users that we've got is people who are just trying to learn React. It's a really easy way to learn React because you don't have to think about the boilerplate. It's very similar to Create React App in that way. Another group of users are developers who are working at bigger companies where their team is potentially using multiple data sources. So for example, if you've got a marketing team that's writing content in Drupal or WordPress, and you've got an e-commerce store that's built in Shopify, and then your documentation team is writing the API docs in Markdown, traditionally that would be a huge pain because you're either going to be doing something like trying to pull all this content into WordPress through different plugins, and then you've got to deal with the, you know, is the plugin up to date? Is the developer who built it, like, are they considering our use cases? How do we manage that? Then you might have to be building these like custom solutions. And it can start to feel really rickety. And the other option is that you put a ton of weight into the client side by making a lot of asynchronous requests once the page loads to get all that data in. So where Gatsby shines in this respect is that it's putting you in a position where the data is all loaded early. So we do early binding of data by building the site, and you're able to put all that data into the site ahead of time so that there's no load on the client side because the data is already there. And there's no real complexity from the developer side because we have a very standardized API for taking external data and plugging it into Gatsby's internal GraphQL data source. So it kind of simplifies the developer experience. It decreases your maintenance surface, so you're not worrying about things that, you know, like little custom data connectors, because that's all standardized and predictable in a way that's really easy. And we're starting to see bigger companies too. Like, we saw like Capital One used it to build a marketing page for one of their credit cards. The React docs are built in Gatsby. Apollo GraphQL has built their site in Gatsby. And we're seeing a lot of like products are using it to have really snappy experiences on mobile and desktop. So it serves a lot of purposes, but most of them are kind of rooted in the idea that you want to have a really high performance website out the back end, and you have a like complex problems on the developer side that you want to solve easily, typically around, you know, lots of data or not wanting lots of boilerplate.
Yeah, out of all those users, I tend to find myself in that React learners category. Mm-hmm. I did recently pull down the Gatsby project and started running it, and it is relatively quick to get up and running and having a Hello World page. So that's definitely nailed down. So tell me a little bit more about, like, static sites in general. They have really no routing system in place because they're just static HTML pages in general. Is that kind of how Gatsby kind of generates all of these micro React applications, or is it doing something a little bit different than those other static sites that I might be used to?
So the way that Gatsby's running under the hood is that it starts by fully server-side rendering the app. And when it does that, it's building just like plain HTML sites. After a Gatsby site is built, you can navigate it on the browser without JavaScript enabled. So that's, you know, that's the SEO thing. And then if right. JavaScript is enabled, what we'll do is we will rehydrate the React app on top of it. And under the hood, we have React Router built in. So we actually support live page navigation. So without having to refresh the browser, you can navigate between pages. It's going to update the URL and give you a navigatable browser history. So you can use your back button the way that you always would. But we're kind of progressively layering that on top. And then Gatsby also has support for client-only routes. So for example, if you had a sales page and that sales page were to take you to like a purchase option that gave you an account and you needed to be able to log into your account and see like, this is the credit card that's on file and this is my billing history. The credit card that's on file and the billing history, that can't or shouldn't be built ahead of time, right? So that data should never be put into the app. So with Gatsby, what we would do is you can specify a particular route as say slash account, that's going to be client only. And then you just use typical templating. So it would be slash account and then slash colon, subview or whatever. And then you can build a standard React app using React Router and kind of just do an authenticated client-side only app. Now, in that case, you're not getting the server-side rendering, but that's okay because you don't really want to server-side render client data because you're either going to be hosting tons and tons and tons of sensitive data as static files, which is probably a bad idea, or
definitely a bad idea. Don't do that, people.
Or you're just putting yourself into a weird situation where you're rendering like these kind of empty husks that you then have to make asynchronous requests to fill. And so we basically would set up the skeleton, and ideally you're using something like the offline plugin, which sets up a service worker so that your app Chrome is, the header, footer, all the components that don't change are already stored in the user's browser. And you are just making requests to get the data that fills them up. And that's kind of outside of Gatsby. It's just a regular app, but we've got support for that built in, right? It's part of our, Great. It's part of our main solution so that we expect people are going to be building dynamic apps on top of Gatsby, despite the fact that it's called a static site generator.
Right. Yeah. You would think from a traditional static site generator, you would think it's more of like serving content rather than applications, mm-hmm. right? And Gatsby's kind of like that hybrid in between both worlds. And I think that's where, at least from my perspective, that's where Gatsby really becomes a viable solution for big companies to use, right? So it's right. not just a marketing site, or it's like actual web applications can live inside of a Gatsby world.
Exactly. That was one of the reasons that I got excited about it when I was at IBM, is because it seemed like something that was going to give us all these really great, like the benefits of static sites are huge.
Yeah, they're tremendous, right?
Because you get things like, so you're building static files, which means that your entire site can run theoretically without a server, or in the case of a dynamic app, it can run with just a bunch of Lambda functions. So you can basically set up like a CDN and an S3 bucket, or Fastly or Akamai or Netlify, whatever you want to use. Put your static files into that bucket and then get onto like Azure Functions or Amazon, I think it's called Lambda, the whatever the serverless stuff is.
Yep.
But
yep.
yeah, you just
and Google Functions and right. yeah, anything that you want to ping, just you can do it within your application level layer,
exactly.
layer right?
Exactly. And so yeah. basically you in doing that, you're getting these tremendous performance benefits because CDNs are designed to be super fast, and you're eliminating these server round trips to get the pages built. So your page, like a Gatsby page, typically you're going to see out of the box with no additional work from the developer, is going to load in like 3 seconds on 3G. And that's crazy fast.
Right.
When you start looking at like what that would cost if you were running like a node server, and then you have to get that to run like in multiple regions, now you're duplicating your node server. You've got to orchestrate those to make sure that the data is intact. Like there's all these different like hard problems to be solved. And at sufficient scale, like that's going to come up anywhere. But when you're a newer company, up to pretty large scale, it's just not an issue if you're only hosting on a CDN, because the CDNs, like IBM is running stuff on Akamai. So, you know, Akamai is pretty affordable. Yeah. Anybody can do that. And if we weren't trying to orchestrate a bunch of servers behind the scenes, we our hosting costs as a like one of the biggest companies in the world, our hosting costs would dwindle to like, you know, pennies for per month for website that was hosted. You know, as an example, I host my website, which my website's not huge. It gets, you know, like 10 to 15,000 uniques a month. And it cost me like $1.05 every month to host my website because I put it on S3 with CloudFront, and it's a Gatsby site.
That's great. I've been paying about $7.50 for a site that doesn't get any traffic on an EC2. So that's an S3 is way more affordable. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about AMP or progressive web apps. How does Gatsby fit into that ecosystem?
I mean, it in theory, I don't think it would be compatible with AMP because AMP is kind of its own JavaScript framework.
Right.
But in terms of what it's attempting to do, if you look at AMP's goals, are to make a bunch of performance-minded decisions the default for web developers. And that is 100% in line with Gatsby's approach. Our goal is to make, like, you don't have to think about performance as a developer. You just build an app. We will do the complicated stuff. We'll do the code splitting. We'll do the deduplication, the minification, all the hardcore, you know, tree shaking and all that good stuff that makes sites super fast. Like, for example, right now we've got this cool project where we're implementing a machine learning algorithm to predictively preload assets in the background so that you get an even faster experience without having to change anything. We just kind of know based on, I don't know if it's Markov chains or what it is, but we're looking in the background at like what the pattern of users will be on your site so that we can say with a relative amount of certainty, hey, we should preload this like bundles, this sub bundle, because that's most likely to get used next, so that the user has an instantaneous experience because the stuff already loaded in the background. And so, you know, bringing that back to the AMP project, like basically what we're trying to do is exactly the same. I haven't tried it, and my gut says that it won't work. I don't think that you could build an AMP site in Gatsby or vice versa. Progressive web apps, on the other hand, are just kind of a general guideline, and all the technology that they're built on is browser standards. So the app manifest and the service worker are kind of the two keys that would make something a progressive web app. Gatsby has built-in, or it doesn't have built-in support, it has plugins, and the plugins are drop-ins. One of them lets you define a manifest, and one of them installs a service worker and all the configuration you need to let your site run offline. So from a progressive web app standpoint, originally, that was all built into Gatsby. The problem is that service workers are extremely powerful, and they can be a foot gun if you're not careful. Like if you set up a service worker and you're not 100% sure how to use it, and you do something like change the name of your service worker, you can accidentally make it so that people can't load your site. And I know this because I did it myself. I took down my own site by changing my service worker around. So we made it opt-in because otherwise we just, there were so many things that were confusing, especially if somebody didn't realize they were installing a service worker and then they're like, well, I destroyed these files and I'm refreshing the page and it still shows me the old stuff. It's like, oh yeah, you got to disable your service worker. And they're like, what the heck's a service worker? So we moved it out to a plugin so it's not so confusing anymore.
Yeah. I'm still kind of learning what a service worker is. So essentially it's like, I think I have the idea around it. It's putting actual code on the client machine mm-hmm. that then just kind of does some stuff in the background. So if you were to say kill your service worker, but not actually tell your application to destroy the service worker that's on the client, then some clients would have this outdated service worker that's just kind of sitting there doing stuff, whereas newer clients might not have that, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of stale code.
It's kind of an interesting thing because like the way it works is a service worker, when you load a website, it will check to see if service workers are supported and then install one. If there's already one installed, then you kind of have this interesting set where, like, the first time it's installed, it fires an install step, which allows you to do things like download a bunch of resources in the background. Or mm-hmm. say, like, you know, these are the files that are absolutely required in order for this app to run, so you need to download these first. On subsequent loads, it'll check for a new service worker, but it won't actually use that service worker until you refresh the page. So there's kind of a one refresh out of date sort of thing for service workers, unless you use a specific strategy that will kind of force everything to update. And that can be a little complicated and confusing. And so typically, you know, you just expect, like, you've installed a service worker. If you make changes, the first time you hit the page, it's going to realize that there is a new one and it's going to kind of tee it up. And then the third time you come back to the page, it'll actually show you the updated service worker. And service workers are powerful because once they've done that install step, now they've got a bunch of stuff that's in the browser, but they can also, they're designed to act as kind of a proxy. So when you make a fetch request, like if you're trying to load an image, that request will go through the service worker first. And the service worker can say, hey, if you've requested an image and I don't have it in my cache, I'm going to show you a 404 image or something. Or for example, you can check the cache first and then go to the network second and drop it into the cache afterward. So that you could, you know, for example, if you were going to my blog, for 10 articles, like the cache is 10 articles deep, you would click through my blog and those articles go into the cache so that if you then lost your connection, you could visit those 10 pages without having to be connected to the internet. So that's super powerful. But again, if you make a mistake, if you change it in a way that service workers don't like, they can get caught in kind of a loop where they're not able to install the new service worker because, like, the name doesn't match, for example, which means that it'll never get the new one, which means that your site is basically broken.
In which case, that's where you ended up.
Right. And so I had to install, I didn't have to install. I had to write up kind of this special, nuke and pave option where you have to, like, check if a service worker is registered, and then you have to register one that just unregisters itself, and then have like this all this code to delete service workers basically. And you just have a cooldown period. You gotta wait for like a month or two to let everybody come back to your site and get that uninstalled service worker, so that then you can re-implement the one that works. So basically, again, you know, this is why we didn't make it a built-in, because it can be a huge pain if you screw it up like I did.
So it sounds like that's more of an advanced feature that a developer would have to have some working knowledge of how service workers work before you'd want them to enable it. So it makes sense to put that behind a plugin.
Well, there's two schools of thought. There's the use the defaults and don't touch them, or there's the learn how it works and be careful. I fell in the middle. Right. Where I was like, well, I'm going to like change some of the defaults after I'd already set them up. And so that's where I got into trouble. I would say just if you're going to use the defaults, that's totally fine. Like if you just turn on the plugin and don't change anything, it's going to work. It's going to be great. If you later want to make changes, do a lot of research about what changes are problematic before you start making them, because that was where I screwed up.
This sounds super interesting. I definitely want to dig in a little bit more. If I wanted to learn just how to get started, where would I go? And are there any other resources that you would suggest our listeners follow up with?
Yeah. So to give another shout out to Shannon Soper, she has been doing a ton of work on the Gatsby documentation. So we have a tutorial on the site that is just, it's just killer. Like it'll meet you where you are, from all the way from I've never opened a terminal in my life, up through I'm kind of an advanced developer, I just want to get up and running quickly. And it introduces each kind of major concept in Gatsby in a section and walks you through a project. And then once you get to the end of each section, it'll give you some advanced things that you can try if you want to try to get your head around them. Outside of that, the documentation is pretty solid. The GitHub issues are a great way to, you know, hear from our core contributors and other people in the community who can help with questions. We've got a Discord channel that you can sign into. It's on the ReactiFlux Discord box, which is where like React and Jest and a lot of major JavaScript frameworks in the React ecosystem. It's where they all keep their chat. And then beyond that, there are this is a really solid collection of tutorials from different companies. Like if you're using Contentful to manage your content, for example, there's a great article from the Contentful team about how to build a Gatsby site using Contentful. Netlify has shown how to build and deploy Gatsby sites to Netlify. But yeah, there's a ton of great content out there. So, just Google for whatever it is you want to use. We can use WordPress as a data source. There's another great tutorial out there on how to hook up WordPress if you want to try to keep the benefits of content management in WordPress, but make your front end faster and more performant. We've got a tutorial for that as well. If you want to learn more about service workers, Jake Archibald is, I think he's on the Google Chrome team, but he has just an absolutely killer, it's called the Offline Cookbook. And it's an amazing resource on service workers, and it kind of shows different ways that you would use it, like cache then network, or network then cache, or having them race, or how to do fallback images if something's not available. It's an absolutely fantastic resource.
I wanted to also mention, I believe Scott Talinsky is working on a course for his Level Up Tuts. And I think he's done a Gatsby course, but I think he's also doing a headless CMS WordPress course. So I'm not sure, but I imagine he's going to use Gatsby as the front end layer on that.
Yeah, I just talked to Wes Boss, and he was mentioning that. And I believe that it's, I think the Gatsby one is out, and the headless CMS one is, it might have been released. I think I saw something about it.
Okay. Yeah. I just heard about it just recently. So you might be right. Maybe I heard about it from it being released, but, I'm super excited for that as well. Cool. And then where you're going to be speaking in, some places across the world in the next, couple of weeks, where are you going to be, and, how can we kind of follow you online?
I'm going to be at Craft Conference in Budapest next week. I'll be speaking there on...
That's the week of May... what is it? May 9th?
It is the week of May 7th, yeah. And it looks like... I think the conference is on the 9th and 10th of May. But I'll be speaking on work-life balance there. That's another topic that we didn't really touch on, but one that's really near and dear to my heart. I will be in Berlin from May 21st to the 25th, not really for anything, just kind of like a Gatsby contributor get together. I'm going to try to meet up with the Graph Cool team because they're doing some cool stuff out there. So if you're in Berlin or in the area or in Budapest, you can find me on Twitter, at twitter.com/JLangsdorf. I'm always happy to meet up and talk about this stuff.
What's your website?
Langsdorf.com. And then I have some code tutorials at code.langsdorf.com.
Cool. Well, we'll put all those in the show notes. So we've been talking to Jason Langsdorf. He's a Gatsby contributor. And thank you so much for joining me, Jason. It's been a pleasure. And you guys can follow us on Twitter. We're Learn With Us Pod. Please give us a 5-star review in anything you listen to or use. 5-star reviews go a long way to help other people find our show. So thank you very much. Thanks, Jason. This has been wonderful.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
All right. Take care, everybody.